You're listening to the Renzo Republic.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the one, the only Remso Republic podcast. I'm your host, talking to you from the one and only Commonwealth of Virginia, coast to coast, Remso W. Martinez. Welcome back. Season 3 is on to an amazing start in our mission to make freedom fun again. We recently surpassed 80,000 downloads, and I've got to tell you, when you look back at where we started over a year and a half ago with producer Ryan and I starting in the basement to where we are now, I mean, this is fun. This is genuinely one of those things that I do greatly enjoy, and getting to do this full time now because of your support, your donations, you sharing it around, you subscribing, leaving ratings and reviews on iTunes. I mean, I love you guys. It's awesome. And the great thing about this is that I was talking to a friend of mine that recently started his own show. We were just chatting, and he was like, you know, I was nervous at first. And I was like, why are you nervous? And he's like, well, I've never been as political as you, Remso. I never worked on campaigns. I never did consulting. I was never an activist. I never went door knocking and waving campaign signs and lobbying in the state house and all that stuff. I just didn't do that. I never wrote. I didn't do any of this. I just wanted to start here, kind of, you know, jumping into cold water in a sense. This is all really new to me, but I'm enjoying it. And that's the great thing about it. There are so many people that have these ideas. They want to go out and learn a new language. They want to go learn to play the piano. Some of them want to start their own show. Well, if you never do it and you keep saying tomorrow, tomorrow starts to become a really relative term. It's really depressing when you listen to Annie at that point. But it's a great honor, and I'm glad you're taking the time to come and listen today, wherever you are. So by the time you're listening to this, July, first couple episodes of season 3, we're back. And I'm still kind of talking about some things that we may have missed over the past month and a half, but these are evergreen topics. These are the things that you're still going to want to confront at some point. These are the things that you need to be a little bit caught up on, because while the situation and the circumstances and the name and the place and the people might change, the overarching argument, the specific issue, that stuff just, it doesn't go away. So what do you do? You've got to keep yourself educated on that. And I've got some interesting members of my family. I've got the dad side, which is really, really progressive Democrat. And I've got my mom's side, which is, you know, very conservative Republican. So I've got kind of a lot of that going on in my life. But what I was really excited about was back in May, I finally graduated from Liberty University, and I was really excited getting my degree and, you know, understanding what the real world is like. And let me tell you, college students, it's not that great. But it's a little bit more interesting than when you're living in a dorm eating ramen noodles. But anyway, we got the pleasure of having President Donald Trump come to speak at Liberty University. It's his very first commencement as President of the United States. And, you know, whether or not you're a Trump hater or a Trump lover, I think everyone that saw the speech, or at least the people that were there with me, people who I know, you know, maybe voted for Gary Johnson or Evan McMullen or just didn't vote at all, I think we all had to say this. He gave a very impressive speech. But, you know, everyone has to find controversy in everything. At one point, he said something which, for me, an evangelical Christian, I was like, wow, I'm really glad he said that. At one point during his speech, he said, "We worship in the United States, we worship God, not government." And at that point, I'm just like, yeah, that's exactly what I want to hear. But apart from just the progressive left that's going after him, they're calling him Trump the theocrat and everything else. And I'm even seeing some writers over the Libertarian Republic saying that he's infringing upon the Establishment Clause, he's bringing church into state and all that jazz. It's a little bit hokey, because I've seen some friends of mine that were trying to argue that there was nothing wrong with it, but they're giving the whole, oh, well, you know, it's this and that, and just really weak arguments. And I kind of want to talk about that, because religious liberty in the United States is at a different point than we were under the Obama years, where we're not under explicit attacks from the administration. But I do want to kind of talk about a little bit about that, but I'm not going to be the one to kind of pave the road on this. We have our special guest who's a former prosecutor and constitutional attorney who was fired from her job for teaching the Constitution to citizen groups. She's a U.S. Army veteran and an overall badass who's paving a way for the Constitution to make a resurgence. Ladies and gentlemen, Chrisanne Hall. Chrisanne, welcome to the program. It's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much. It is my pleasure and my honor.
So I saw nothing wrong with what he said. You know, we are, and people can argue this, we are a biblical Christian nation. We worship God, not government. And for, you know, a Jew, that can mean one thing. For a Muslim, that can mean another thing. But, you know, ultimately, even if you're a secular atheist, it should just prove that, you know, we go for the individual. We go for what we deem to be the purpose of our existence. I mean, everyone's just, I feel like they're trying to, you know, they're trying to poke at something that's a non-issue. I mean, I don't think he broke the Establishment Clause. I don't understand the controversy.
Well, I think the controversy exists because, as a whole, Americans have become ignorant of the principles embodied within the Constitution. We have not taught the right things about the Constitution and the principles upon which it is built for a very, very long time. And over the last maybe 4 or 5 decades, the understanding of separation of church and state and the understanding of the First Amendment and freedom of religion and the Establishment Clause, all of that has been lost, not only simply from failing to teach, but through errant teaching itself. It's interesting because I teach two classes. I teach lots of classes, but I teach two classes specifically that address this issue of separation of church and state amongst other liberty principles that are embodied and created within our Constitution. And this separation of church and state is something that we, like I said, have been teaching errantly for a very long time. And it's taught errantly on both sides of the fence. So you have Christians who will argue that separation of church and state is not a legitimate argument because it's not in the Constitution. You can't find separation of church and state in the Constitution anywhere. And then you have the other side, the non-Christian, the left side or the non-Christian side, declaring that anything that anybody in government does that has any glimpse of mention of faith or any God whatsoever is a violation of the Establishment Clause, when the truth is actually somewhere in the middle. You see, it's simply not a violation of the Establishment Clause for someone in government to express their faith. And separation of church and state is in the Constitution, not the text of it, but the very principle, the foundational principle of separation of church and state is essential to the maintenance of all religious liberty. And like I said, because we don't teach the right things anymore, we simply don't understand how this is supposed to be applied.
So in that statement itself, I mean, he did no wrong. He was just stating his personal belief because the president can do that.
Well, if you look at what he's done, okay, if you look at the entire text of the speech, he's not only, especially in that portion, he's not only talking about his personal beliefs, he's making historical application. He's talking about the Mayflower Charter and the pilgrims who came. He's talking about the Declaration of Independence and how it invokes the understandings of we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. He's talking about the politicians and people elected to government who put their hand on a Bible and swear to God to uphold their oath and their promise to the people. So he's speaking about this in an historical context, and he's also speaking about it from a personal context. And you have to understand the audience that he is he's speaking to as well is a Christian college. So what he is saying is not meant to proselytize, because the people in that audience have been going to Liberty University for 4 years, and they have already received more Christian education than they could in a 30-minute speech from Donald Trump. And not only that, everything that he said historically is absolutely true. And then once again, it's this errant understanding of separation of church and state. And if we look at this from a historical context, and this is part of the classes that I teach, first we must understand that there is absolutely nothing new and nothing novel in our Declaration, our Constitution, or our Bill of Rights. Everything within these three foundational documents, which define the government and the principles upon which we are formed, came from over 700 years of history, and the text and the principles are actually extracted from five written documents written over those 700 years. And over those five documents, this principle of separation of church and state, in its proper contextual and historical meaning, are repeated over and over again. The first document in the history of our Constitution is called the 1100 Charter of Liberties. The 1100 Charter of Liberties was a document written by King Henry I as a promise to the English people that government would never be evil and oppressive again. And he made a list of things that the government could never do, because if they engaged in these particular activities, the people would be on notice that they have an evil and oppressive government, and they would be righteously justified to resist this government. The very first promise that Henry made to the people, to promise that they would not be an evil and oppressive government, was not even in the list of 14, it was in the preamble. And the very first promise was that the church would be completely free from government intrusion. That is not only the definition of separation of church and state, but is the origin of the principles of religious liberty that are embodied in our First Amendment. And the understanding is, the meaning is, and has been for centuries, that separation of church and state means that government can have no control and no influence in the church, because if the government is influencing, controlling your church, then you have an evil and oppressive government. Separation of church and state has for centuries meant that government has no business in your church. It has only been since our most recent bout of educated ignorance that we have come to accept an errant definition of separation of church and state that teaches people that separation of church and state means that God has no business in public discussion. That is absolutely false. And freedom of religion within the context of our Constitution is not just simply a freedom to engage in religious activities. It is a liberty to live according to the dictate of your conscience. And the same liberty that allows Donald Trump as a man to speak about his faith in public is the same liberty that allows an atheist president to step up and speak about his faith, or an atheist plumber to step up in public and speak about his faith, a Jewish person, a Muslim, anybody, a Satanist, has the freedom to step up and speak publicly about what they believe. And what we need to understand is that any government control of speech, whether it be positive of religion or negative of religion, is still a control of not just simply speech, but of conscience. And that is exactly what the First Amendment was designed to prevent.
So I agree with you 110%. But one of the issues that I'm hearing from a lot of people, and this is something that I have to give Trump a lot of credit to, in terms of you know, returning the favor to his evangelical base, I think he's done that in spades. And I did not think he was going to do that at all. I think he was just using them to get elected, and then he was just going to cast them to the curb. But one of the things he did that didn't get a lot of coverage was he repealed the Johnson Amendment, which essentially got rid of the, you know, the overlap on churches that said you cannot get involved politically in any way, shape, or form. And for a lot of people at Liberty, and I graduated from Liberty, a lot of them were like, you know, this is great because now we can confront the culture, we can confront the state on biblical terms. And then I hear some people that are like, you know, I don't want to go to church and get a lecture about how I should vote or what's biblical. You know, I understand kind of both sides of that. Do you think in repealing that and allowing churches to become a little bit more, well, not a little bit more. I mean, some were always politicized. You look at Jeremiah Wright. But for the most part, do you think it's the church's place to get involved in politics?
Well, I think you have several issues in that statement altogether. We need to sort of correct a misconception about what Donald Trump did with that executive order. Donald Trump cannot change legislation with an executive order. He cannot repeal any amendment within the legislation. That is not within the power of the president. What he can do as the leader of the executive branch is instruct the executive agencies not to aggressively enforce particular portions of law based on his understanding that the portions of those legislation are unconstitutional. So he only has control over the executive branch and how the executive agencies execute the laws of Congress. He cannot repeal law. That is not within the power of the president. Now, the other thing that we need to understand is that churches by 501c3 are not prohibited from engaging in political activity. As a matter of fact, by law through the IRS, every church, whether they if they are a 501c3, can engage in political activity not to exceed 10% of their resources of both time and money. When you think about how much money a church spends throughout the year in their ministry and how much time the church engages within that ministry in the year, it is practically impossible for a church to exceed the 10% mark and still actually be an actively functioning church. So there is no restriction upon the church to engage, to keep them from engaging in political activity. Not only that, churches by IRS code can have candidates come and address the congregations. And so this is just really scratching the surface of misunderstanding according to IRS code and what we're having. What has happened is our Christians, our church leadership have been educated errantly and have been brainwashed into believing that they cannot do something that they are absolutely allowed to do, absolutely permitted to do. And so what we need to understand, first off, is not illegal to engage in any activity, and there's never been a church who's actually been prosecuted for any of this activity ever. And so what this is a self-imposed restriction beyond the letter of the law. The next thing that we need to understand is that there is absolutely no requirement for a church to be a 501c3. If you are a church in America, you are not required to get a 501c3 to be a church. Not only are you not required to get a 501 to be a 50 to obtain 501c3 permission from the IRS to be a church, you don't need 501c3 paperwork for the donations to your church to be tax deductible. So if you are a church and you are not 501c3 approved by the IRS. If people donate to you, their donations are still tax deductible. And here's how this works. If you are not a 501c3 church and someone makes a donation to your church and they are audited, they can prove that their donation to you is tax deductible. And these are according to the rules of the IRS. Now, this is not just something that I'm making up. They are then permitted to go to the church. The church provides a letter to the to the person who made the donation regarding the IRS audit, stating here is the name of the church, here is where we're located, here is a copy of our bylaws, or here's how you can find a copy of our bylaws. We are a church. Signed, the pastor, the deacon, the vice president, or whatever of the church. And by IRS regulation, that donation is then tax deductible. So the whole idea that a church has to have a 501c3 is simply a lie and a mechanism for the government to convince the people that they must censor themselves beyond what the law dictates. It's simply a control, which, by the way, if we remember the explanation of separation of church and state and the history of separation of church and state, makes these IRS regulations and their control over the church completely unconstitutional and contrary to every sense of religious liberty in which our Constitution was drafted.
So one thing you keep referencing is the miseducation, the fact that a lot of people are, you know, behaving and acting and going forth in a way which is contradictory to the truth. Now, typically, I just blame public schools because I think, you know, that's the obvious answer typically. But where's the source of this miseducation coming from? Where are people getting this idea of, you know, things being one way or another?
Well, you know, I think that it's a cultural thing, and I don't blame the public schools. I blame the churches. Because what we have now, and this is going to sound really harsh, but what we have now are pastors and church leadership who are more concerned about money than they are about the word of God. So you have pastors who will not research the truth, who will not speak the truth, because they will not engage in political activity of any sort. They won't even talk about cultural sin problems anymore because they're afraid that the IRS will come after them. And they're afraid erroneously that because they have believed the lie over generations that they will lose their 501c3 status. They will lose their tax deduction. They're also, you can't blame it just on the tax deduction issue. They're afraid that they'll make somebody upset in the pew and lose a tithe. They're afraid that someone in church leadership will get upset and they will lose their position. And when we analyze all of these three consistently and common behaviors of a modern American pastor and a modern American church, what we see is a common denominator: idolatry. So we have pastors and leaders in churches who are afraid to lose their 501c3 money, their tithe money, and their job money. And that is idolatry. Not only that, it is also contrary to the word of God. God is to be the provider, not government, not pews, and not people. And so what we have now are pastors who are no longer operating in the will of God because they've turned themselves over to idolatry. They no longer fear God. They fear what men will do more than what God will do, which means the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, which means that they no longer have the wisdom of the Lord within them. And so I believe that this fate of this liberty falls at the feet of American churches because they are the ones who have, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. They have an obligation to deny government intrusion in their churches, and they have an obligation to speak truth, not just simply truth in the word of God, but truth in general. And so what we have now our churches that are failing to do their duty, and we have generation upon generation of Christians who are absolutely ignorant, and in their ignorance have become neutered and have become irrelevant in the power of the gospel and the influence of government.
Wow, that's a lot to take in. Anyway, Chrisanne, I know we can probably keep going on about this for hours, but we've got to kind of wrap things up. We've covered a lot of information in a short amount of time, but you know, what's the biggest take-home message you want our listeners to go on with, especially, you know, active Christians?
Well, I suppose there's two things that I would hope people would take home from this. Number one, that we all have an obligation to speak the truth. And that Christians have an obligation not only to speak the truth, but to know the truth, no matter who is teaching them. And biblically speaking, there has been such an errant preaching in the pulpit that Christians are not allowed or should never be involved in government. It's this errant mutation of Romans 13 that where pastors are teaching that we must slavishly submit to all government as ordained by God. And that's simply not what Romans 13 means. And to interpret Romans 13 in that way, you must extract us. You've got to just simply cut chapters out of the Bible and ignore them in their completion. For example, Daniel was a politician. Daniel was the most powerful politician in his community, second only to the king himself. And to say that people, Christians, are not to be involved in government is ridiculous, because Daniel was not only involved in government, but he opposed law that had been legally legislated by the government. You have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refusing to obey the law. You have Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego all refusing to obey the government's mandated food plan. And when Daniel refused to pray in the manner to the king as the law described, he was thrown in the lion's den. And there's a very interesting passage in, I think it's Daniel chapter 6, that I would hope people go look at. It says that Daniel, in speaking to the king, saying, "No harm has come to me because God has shut the mouths of the lion and God has sent me a message that I have broken no law." Now, Daniel clearly broke the law that the king signed into effect. But God sent a message that said, "No, Daniel, you did not break a law," which means under God's terms, there are some laws of men that are no law at all. And then you have to look in the New Testament when the apostles were praying and they were arrested for praying and put into jail. God broke them out of jail, told them to go back into the streets and preach again. God told them to break the law. So you can't tell me that God, who rewards people and even instructs people to break the law when the law is contrary to that of the principles of God, that pastors are teaching it correctly when they say we're supposed to slavishly submit to all government. And we need to be biblically correct, but we also need to be liberty correct. Religious liberty means my liberty to speak about God in public means that everybody has a liberty to speak in their conscience publicly. So I'm not going to create any laws that you know, have morality police running through the street slapping people for not being Christians. But we can't have atheists, and we cannot have anybody or Muslims or Jews or anybody else creating laws that slaps Christians down for speaking on their conscience either, whether they be people in government or not. It's a matter of government. It's not a matter of men. And I just hope that people would take a little bit more time to study this out in history, to take a little bit more time and learn the truth, and stop just simply repeating what some judge in the Supreme Court said, what some politician said, or what some professor said. because the truth is actually more liberating. The truth establishes and proclaims a liberty for all. And that's what we need to be standing for.
I really wish more people had the courage to put it that way, as you just did. But, yeah. That's,
well, the courage comes with the wisdom and the knowledge. It really does. I think that people, many people believe what I just said in their heart, and they know it in a sort of super official sense. But until we take the time to know this truth, I mean, I teach two classes on it. I'd be happy to come and teach anybody. I talk about it on my radio show a lot. We talk about it on Facebook. I have articles about it on the website. I mean, there were so many resources available. On my website, there's an article that's called Separation of Church and State in Context, which will summarize this historical and legal truth about separation of church and state. There's so many resources available out there that teach this truth. And what we need to do is just be willing to educate ourselves beyond personality, beyond a cult of expert, and become infused with the wisdom and the boldness that we need to be purveyors of truth as individuals.
Exactly, because the Lord calls us to be salt and light upon the earth, and how can we do that unless we know, you know, the truth in its absolute sense?
Right, right. And you can't know the truth if you're constantly consumed by bad information.
Exactly.
We are not designed to be a people who simply go along and believe everything that we say. I mean, we have inherently a rebellious nature. Be it good, be it bad, we have inherently a rebellious nature. And within that rebellious nature, we are supposed to be testing everything that we are told. My goodness, Christians, the Bible, God tells us to test him. Over and over, in the Bible, God says, prove me. Test me, try me. If God himself wants you to test and try him, why wouldn't you try your pastor and your professor?
Preach. Chrisanne, I don't know what more to say to that. I mean, that's absolutely true. But to kind of wrap things up, and speaking of getting the right information, you brought up your Facebook page and your website. Where can people learn more about the courses you offer, listen to your show and everything else?
My website is chrisannehall.com, chrisannehall.com. And you can go there and search. There's a search engine in my website where you can find the Separation of Church and State article. I have lots of material for free on the website that people can access, download, print out, share, tweet, post. I mean, just if we're going to be purveyors of truth, we've got to have the boldness to post this stuff and speak this stuff and learn this stuff. And again, I don't want anybody to ever believe anything that I'm writing. I'm asking you to test me and try me. I believe that what I am teaching is the truth because I've researched it. I've done the work, but I don't want you to believe me because I want you to do the work too, so that you can be the expert. You can't have a boldness to speak if you don't have a confidence in what you're actually saying. So you can get the Facebook, you can get Twitter from the website, chrisannehall.com. You can get our radio shows from chrisannehall.com. We have a YouTube channel. We have all kinds of things happening and lots of great new programs, online education that is coming up in the next, in 2017. Not only that, C-SPAN is also carrying a course of mine right now on state sovereignty. So if you want to watch my state sovereignty class at no cost to you, all you have to do is go to your search engine and search Chrisanne Hall C-SPAN Sovereign Duty, and you will have my 90-minute class right there.
Outstanding. Chrisanne, thank you so much for coming on the program today. It was extremely informative, and I thank you for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I just hope that we understand that the liberty that we enjoy must be enjoyed by those who disagree with us, or no one has liberty at all.
Exactly. Anyway, folks, definitely check out all of her resources, her website, and everything else. And as always, tune in next week. Today's show is brought to you by the Self-Defense Radio Network, Auto Radio, and Player.fm. These commercial-free specials are everything you want. As always, be good to your neighbor. Treat yourself a little, you know, more often than you typically do. And tune in next week. I'm Remso W. Martinez. Good night.
Stay connected to Liberty's Rabble Rouser on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with the latest episodes, blogs, and other available content. What are you waiting for?